Blog Talk Radio.
Because of a lion shall break every chain.
Peace, everybody. Brother Maher, you on?
Yes, I am. Peace and greetings to everyone. Good afternoon. And also, my friend Aline will be joining us as well. This is going to be a very good program.
Okay. I'm waiting on them to call in. I don't see them on the caller board.
Yeah, 646 area code.
Yes, they hadn't called in yet.
Okay. So he will.
Okay.
And go ahead, my brother. It's good to hearing your voice one more time.
Oh, yes, sir. All right.
And,
so that's,
what happened? Somebody showed up?
No, I was going to just go into your topic of the day.
Yeah, yes, sir. And today we're talking about the esoteric use of language. And we're going to be diving into different areas because, you know, how we speak with one another in certain settings, it is not held as the same. So from courtroom, especially legal documents, and other areas to include the origin of the words we're using in English, how we use words now, this is not their first use. They came from another source. And often the case we're using with redefining these words often leads us to a watered down interpretation of what we think we're saying. So this is the kind of area that, you know, that we're dealing with. So, you know, just to whet your the listening audience appetite. And of course, you know, okay. Brother Drew, please, you know, join in if, you know, you have some questions or you like to get a certain direction going for this program with regards to what we're talking about. Feel free to, you know, open up with that.
Okay. Also, 646, you just joined in. You on with us also?
Okay. Yes, I am.
All right.
There he is. That's
hello?
This is,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Aline. Aline?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay,
all right, well,
it.
We, as you know, we just started. And Brother Drew, I'd like to introduce you to Aline. He,
yes,
him
sir.
And I, we go back some time, and I'll let him go into as much as he wants with regards to how far back we go. But he is someone that I have a lot of respect for. Our friendship is beyond what words can use to describe. So,
okay.
Aline, you may go ahead, my friend, and go ahead and chime in. And again, the topic is what for the listening audience, esoteric use of language and how it affects and impacts us and the areas it actually gets into, especially in the legal arena. So, Aleem, I'm just going to be quiet for a few seconds because I've already ran my mouth for a few seconds, and you go ahead and say what you need to say.
Okay. First off, I'm out of New York City, and myself and my here, my full proper legal name is Abdul Aleem L. Myself and my here, we got our L's at the exact same time, and we are not members of any of these wild and crazy organizations who refer to themselves as L's, Bays, Morris, and the like. No, we're straight shooters. We're on the straight and the narrow. I heard some of what you were saying as it relates to opening up the esoteric usage of language. To
mm-hmm.
say the esoteric
yes.
Usage of language, it's that's like an understatement, so to speak. What we're witnessing now the world over, where they've got everyone walking around with a mask on their face, that's strictly and solely by the esoteric usage of language. That and bombarding our conscious, subconscious, and even our superconscious minds night and day, every day. We're being told specifically now that to wear a mask, a legal requirement, that there's something in the air and that we're all affected by it and that we must wear masks. Here in New York City, they're starting to issue $1,500 tickets for people in certain areas who don't wear masks. That's strictly and solely language. With all of the science that we have, they can't show forth and prove that what they're saying is scientific, as opposed to telling us and revising documents and the like, telling us what's going on as opposed to showing us what's going on. And here's one
mm-hmm.
I'd like to bring out as it relates to what they're doing. They're telling us about these computer models regarding this pandemic. Would anyone like to try and guess what this computer model is based on? It's based on mathematics, and are you ready? Analytics is not it. We're told a lot. It's based on
wow.
a casino model. It's based on a casino model of mathematics. Remember, the casino model is based on the house always has to win. And
wow.
That's what
and that level of
saying.
Math. Right. That level of math is, I remember back in my college years when they talk about gambling and writing code, they don't call it gambling, but they talk about permutations. So this is where the algorithms for guessing comes in, and it's included in the coding. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Continue. Yes.
And
wow.
It was in fact a mathematics professor that came up with this. And no, he wasn't from Vegas. I think he was from Iowa somewhere. And he came up with this all the way back in the 1930s. So as you can see, they've
wow.
been doing this quite some time. But to get into what everyone wants to hear as it relates to the legal jargon in the courtroom, I'm
right.
pretty certain my hearers told you at one point that they're using Black's Law Dictionary.
Yes.
It's three dictionaries that they're actually using. Black's Law Dictionary, Ballantyne's Law Dictionary, which I'm certain almost no one has heard of, and the granddaddy of them all, Bouvier's Law Dictionary. The Bouvier family,
mm-hmm.
Jacqueline Bouvier, that's the dictionary that they're using, and that goes all the way back to the 1817 and 1600s.
Mm.
Black's Law
mm-hmm.
Dictionary only goes up to the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, Mahir.
I was going to say, as we were talking, reminiscing about some of this, you were saying something very specific, talking to me regarding what edition of Black's Law Dictionary still carry the legal definition in printed form of the definition of white, and you mentioned some other things as well that was mentioned in there. So I'm just going to go ahead and would you please just, when you get around to that, elaborate on that, because that was key what you said this morning to me.
Okay. The dictionary that basically determines who and what we are, it's Black's Law Dictionary, and that's the fourth edition. I think they're all the way up to the eighth edition of Black's Law Dictionary, and it's just like anything. It's just like giving birth to something. Each time a generation gives birth to something, the seed or the individuals, they grow just a little bit weaker. Well, they're all the way up to Black's Law Dictionary, I think either eight or nine by now. So, of course, they're so far removed from the first few definitions that they put in there, one through pretty good, but when you get Black's Law Dictionary, one through five, you've got goal. I just so happen to have a very rare edition of the fourth edition. That's the edition, the only edition that has the term free white person, and that's a legal definition. To give you a little bit of history based on the legal definition of free white person, that term became popular in the early 1900s. You have white immigrants streaming into America, and they need to put these white people to work. But specifically, they don't have any skills. The quote-unquote newly freed black slaves, 9 out of 10 of them were skilled workers, skilled laborers. You'll read about that in a book called Black Reconstruction in South Carolina by John G. Jackson. It's a small book,
mm-hmm.
but it packs a punch.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing as they had to put these whites to work, there was an act. It was called the Cook Something Act or the Something Cook Act that said that when a white male at the age of 21 who was free, a job became available, he had to get that job. That's where the term free white in 21 came from. But the term free white person precedes that. And when you look up free white person in Black's Law Dictionary, fourth edition, they have all of
mm-hmm.
these European nations down there. And then they get to the end, and they said, but not Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be mind-blowing, exactly. They name all of these European nations, but when they get to the end of it, they say, but not the Europeans. As a matter of fact, I pulled my Black's Law Dictionary out, and I'm going to read that definition for us. Just bear
there
with
we go.
Me
documentation is the conversation.
Exactly.
And this is one of the things we really learned to do on our lecture and class platforms back in the day. That's why it made it very difficult for people to think that they can stand up and argue with us, especially when we would open up the book and say, argue with this. We didn't write this. It's already in the book. Argue that.
Right. And here's one with respect to Black's Law Dictionary, fourth edition. Do you know this
right.
book is about a 2,000-page book?
And the newest ones, the other editions are less than that, I'm guessing.
A whole lot less than that. Try half of it.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, the progression of how they start removing words, and the consensus is, well, these words are not as used. It don't mean that it is no longer relevant. They're just saying people are speaking less and less these days this way as it was before. So we'll just go ahead and vote to just take these things out as a result of paying attention to the fact that, hey, these terminologies are not really being used as much. But anyway, go ahead. Back to you.
Okay, I'd like to piggyback on what you said to give strength to that. We're all familiar with the King James Bible. Everyone is familiar
Correct.
With the King James Bible. But did anyone know that there was a man, Noah Webster, that back in the 1800s, he edited the King James Bible. He edited words that were he considered no longer in use. And he updated it
right.
to quote unquote modern English. I was blown away when I saw that. I said, imagine that. And his background was he was heavily into the church. So as you can see, there's plenty of that going around as it relates to editing out words and updating terms. Okay, I've got three white persons.
Hold on,
yeah.
on the
hey,
three
hey, hey,
one
hold on, Brother Lean.
Yes.
Yeah, Brother Drew.
Yes, I think we got somebody holding on the 318 area code with their hands up. I don't know if you take them calling.
318, that's that might be Cole. That's Louisiana.
Oh, shoot. I think I just lost him, but okay.
Okay.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Aline. You were about to go ahead and say something.
Okay, I'm going to read the definition of free white person, and it's somewhat
right.
lengthy. Free white
okay.
persons referred to in the Naturalization Act as amended by the Act July 14, 1870, has meanings naturally given to it when used in First Statute, Section 103, Chapter 3, meaning all persons belonging to the European races then commonly counted as white and their descendants, including such descendants in other countries to which they have immigrated. It includes all European Jews more or less intermixed with peoples of Celtic, Scandinavian, Teutonic, Iberian, Latin, Greek, Slavic descendants. It includes the Magars, the Laps, the Finns, the Basques, the Albanians. It includes the mixed Latin, Celtic, Iberian, Moorish inhabitants of Spain, and Portugal. Did anyone hear that?
Mm.
Moorish inhabitants of Spain.
And we know what color they are physically.
Exactly. What that's telling you is that free white person is a status. It has nothing whatsoever to do with color. And they mention mixed Jews in there. Anything
yes.
that's mixed is not pure. So we're clearly not talking about color.
Right.
And then it goes on, the Moorish inhabitants of Spain and Portugal, the mixed Greek, Latin, Phoenician, and North African inhabitants of Sicily, and the mixed Slav and the Tatar inhabitants of South Russia. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It does not include the Caucasian race, the Aryan race, or the Indo-European races, nor the mixed Indo-European, Dravidian, Semitic, and Mongolian peoples who inhabit Persia. And then there's a case down here. The case
mm-hmm.
is Ex parte Shahid, United States versus Cartesonian. And this case goes all the way back to the early 1900s, 1903.
Yeah. And that's what I like about Black's Law Dictionary. It's, you know, Ballantyne gives you case history too, but Ballantyne's case, some people are wondering, this brother did mention Ballantyne. Ballantyne is more of a layman's way of putting it with case history. And Black's Law is just giving it to you straight with case history. Okay, Aline?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, Okay, I'm just saying. So, wow. If I had to form a question, it's more or less along the lines of what has happened to us now. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you were asking a question.
Yeah, no.
What has happened?
I was saying, yeah, what is happening with us now where a great many of us, we don't know this information anymore. And here it is. It's still standing case law. It's still here. It didn't go anywhere. You know?
And that standing case law, if I may, that standing case law, it's called stare decisis.
Yeah.
That's a Latin term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't go anywhere. It's still here. What they've done is they've taken us off of law and they put us on statutes. We're on a statutory system that they established back in the mid-1950s, and they've updated it and they've brought us up to the present. We're under statutory law. That's why every word of the law and every individual within law enforcement or a public office must be bonded, because this is not law.
Yeah, wow. And while you're mentioning this statutory law, they have prima facie law, and they have maritime or what they call maritime law, which martial law.
I'm trying to get a question in on state.
I'm trying to get in.
Oh, we didn't hear you.
I'm here, but they already started talking. I'm in the queue, but I can't get their attention. How do you get?
Hey, Colt, we can hear you.
All right.
He said that you called in before. I figured it was you, and then he said something about your call got dropped. So when he said 318, I said, "Oh, that's you." I told Drew that's out of Louisiana. So are you there, Cole? What's your question?
Yes, I'm here. Well, here.
Yes, I can hear you.
I was listening, but the latter part, my young brother got to read. Why didn't he read the rest of that Black Law Dictionary? It says that, and you cannot, that the Caucasian could not be a United States citizen.
Well, do.
That's in the latter part of that very thing he was reading in Black Law Dictionary, fourth edition, and it says
right.
You cannot be a United States citizen in the latter part of that.
You're asking, did it say he cannot be a United States citizen?
It says you cannot be if you read the rest. I have all of that. Now you know we come out of Becky Hood's study group in Dallas, and we had Black's Law. We have Black's Law. I got fourth through seventh edition. And if you read the latter part, down it says if you cannot be a United States citizen, but the Caucasian cannot be.
Called white.
Let me help you out. The word United States has three legal meanings.
Let's go to the end since you're not a citizen.
The word United States has three legal meanings, and each United States has its own set of citizens. And the one specifically that they talk about is the corporation, and that you can find at 28 U.S.C. Section 3002, Subsection A, paragraph 15, those are the United States citizens that they're talking about, federal corporate citizens.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Thanks
for
that.
That's a
reminder for me. I forgot about that.
That's page 792. You know, we got the book, man. You know, we go way back, right? In our study group,
yeah,
and it's page 792. I have those books. You know, I got all my library, 15,000 books in my library. You know that. And also it says, according to Noah Webster's dictionary, 1828, that the word black means pale or white.
All right, Brother DeWaters, I want to also.
Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary. I think you're talking about the copper-colored races.
Yeah, it goes to the copper colors. It says black means albino, a fair skin. The word black does not mean what we think it means. And you and the brother is right. These terminology we use have been adulterated. a lot of words we use now have been so altered that they don't mean what they think they mean. Like the word, if you say ethnicity, the word for ethnicity in the etymology does not mean your culture. It says ignorant, stupid, or heathen. And I'm listening to, and I'm look at the 1705 Virginia slave law showing that black, that Negroes used to buy white for slaves back as far as the 1640s. All Negroes or people of color were not slaves. And that's another misnomer. In my book, The Other Side of Slave, the Untold Story that I wrote about, it was published back in 2005, I called all of that. We've been misled badly by the media and so-called black scholars. We didn't know shit from Shinola. They didn't do the research. I've done research and I pulled the records.
Right.
The census records, all the genealogy, I pulled the records, and I got it in my book.
Right.
Well,
hey,
here's
Cole,
one.
Go ahead.
Talking
go
about
ahead,
these black scholars and how useless they are, here's one. He's supposedly one of the preeminent black scholars in America. I read about him just this morning on a site called Blacks in Higher Education, the Journal of Blacks in Higher Education. You can go right online and pull it up. Michael Eric Dyson, who's a professor of history at Georgetown, he's resigning from Georgetown to go teach at Vanderbilt. Now, that flies on its face, and he's a tenured professor at Georgetown. Georgetown is as prominent a university as you're going to find in the United States, and I'm not trying to talk them up. I don't need to. They're one of the quote-unquote think tanks. They're right in Washington, D.C., and they're one of the federal government think tanks. It lets you know two things. First off, he's not what we're told as far as a scholar is concerned. There's so little of our history that he either really knows or he realistically puts out. I refer to Michael Eric Dyson as a long conversation waiting to happen with no information passing in all the time he speaks.
Okay, everybody, I just had to bring Brother DeWater online also. Brother DeWater, yo? Brother DeWater, check your mute button. All right, y'all, I'm opening up all the lines and back open. I just let y'all know Brother DeWater is.
Yeah, right. I love him. Brother Meher.
Yeah.
Along with this topic is powerful, but not only that, understanding that, but also understanding that these words that we use are also tied into a frequency that unlocks a certain in your psychic. You mentioned about the mind, but there's a thing called the collective unconscious that we tap into, and there's six levels to your mind, not powerful. It's six levels to the mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is one of the main reasons why what we are talking about today and the in-depthness that we're getting into with this topic, when they changed the language on us and gave us what we have now, they knew the vibration they were putting us on and why, even with the origin of words that we're saying in English, that's why I started out before Brother Aleem actually got on and was in the queue, why I said what I said, okay? So you are using words that have an origin in another language, including the word God. That comes from a whole other concept. That's not a concept to us.
That okay? is so true.
You have to check the people where it came from and what they meant by it, not what they're telling us it should mean now.
That is
so,
that's
Brother Drew, I heard you. Is Dwight on there yet?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Dwight.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You just said a magic word when you say God, because God came in the fifth century. If we ask ourselves a question, what did black folks? So we know what we're talking about. Who did the subhuman? Because we speak in his language right now. First they called God. Well, they first called him Odin. We go in a chronological order when we study. when me and Cohen taught for 40-some years, it's everything in a chronological order with the five W's, the esoteric knowledge. His name was Odin, Woden, God, Guru, Gad, God in the 5th century.
Right.
And you believe in this word. See, white folks put everything in a revised version. See, and one thing that I wanted you to expound on a little bit, Mahal, before I was calling, you just kicked me off when you said that word right there, is a key is the southern and the northern kingdom. The Bible wrote about some people that had two kingdoms, and they had kings. But
right.
king in the language is the dialect. See, if you are the second degree in the Masonic Lord, the password that carries two of them, Jekin and Shippolet. Well, Shippolet and
right.
Shippolet. See, in the northern kingdom and the other kingdom, they pronounce that word differently. That's why they could tell. The dialect was very, very important because one of the key to the Germanic race of people and language, which is this dialect, and who
right.
is using this. Yeah, and
right.
I want
now,
you to
yeah.
expand on that.
Okay,
and
so
thing,
so
one more thing, Mahara.
Right.
Every
right.
nation of people, I talked to Cole on this the other day. Every nation of people had their clothing and their fabric. That's how they was represented.
Yes.
You knew them by what clothes they wear. You knew the Romans because they wore red. You knew Moses. They know who Moses came out of Hebrew because, hell, he had Hebrew fabric clothes on. See,
right.
Each nation of people, well, that's the day and time because, see, me and Cole went through bell bottoms, and now we living in Hoochie Mama and Hoochie Papa kingdom now with another dress code. And you said something else about language. Now, when I was 5 years old and Cole was 5 years old, our grandmother would say, go down to the grocery store, get me 2 bits worth of hang down and 4 bits worth of rat cheese. Now,
right.
You don't know what 2 bits, 4 bits, a bit is because back when me and Cole was little bitty boys, that's just the language that our grandparents used. They didn't sit out on what you call now. They sit out on the gary. You don't know what a gary
right.
is. That's a poach.
Right. All right. I
See,
agree
I
with you.
I go on and on of how the language has changed every decade, every 10 years. The language changed and the school of thought get more liberal.
Excuse me, brother.
Right.
If I
yes.
may, you made mention about the word porch. The word porch is preceded by the proper term veranda. That's how we got the term for porch. Not many people could speak properly, and they couldn't say veranda.
You know, Aline, I wanted to lead into something with what I just heard Brother Dawaya saying, and also off the heels of what Cole was saying. We're talking, because they're leading somewhere, and it's to the next point. In your classes, Aline, you used to always talk about how something should be written or not written. And the term you used to use is the legal term, symbiography. So,
oh, yes. As a matter
I want to,
yes. Wanna,
and so,
yeah,
go ahead. I wanted you to elaborate
on
that.
Yeah, I got my computer on. I can pull that right up. That is the term that is the mechanism, I should say, not a term, the mechanism with which they use to write legal documents. If you notice, whenever court is getting ready to come out with a particular decision,
right,
it's always in a particular format.
Mm-hmm.
And
because
the
Yawaya always talk about signs, symbols, and numbers, and here it is, we're going into symbiography. Because here it is, they're telling you legally
how
they utilize symbols.
How you spelling that word, Meher?
Arlene, how's that word spelled? It's a long word.
It's a very long word.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm down here at the S's.
Give me the root.
S-Y-M-B-O-L.
S-Y-M-B-O-L. Uh-huh.
Symbol, A-E.
Okay.
A-E-O-G-R-A-P-H-Y.
A-E-O.
Symbiography.
Mm-hmm.
S-Y-M-B-O.
And I know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Arithmetic.
So you got the word symbol in there.
Been taught no arithmetic.
I missed something. I don't know what S-Y-M.
B-O-L.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
A-E-O.
Okay.
G-R-A-P-H-Y.
Mathematics and arithmetic.
Right. And I bring that word up specifically, Aline, for you to elaborate on, because you used to discuss the part about how there was a law that said that it is illegal to write something in such a way that the people can't understand it.
That is what I sent you just the other day.
Right.
That's on the internet. Let me pull that up.
I didn't get the word, but Mayor, you can text that word to him. I'm going to look into it more because I want to look into that a little bit more.
Yeah,
right.
What I'll do is I have it as a Microsoft Word file. I'll send it to Mahir. In fact, let me read the definition, and you'll get fully what they're talking about. Symbiography.
Okay.
The art or cunning rightly to form and make written instruments. It is either judicial or extrajudicial. The latter being wholly occupied with instruments as concern matters not yet judicially in controversy, such as instruments of agreement or contracts and testaments or last will.
Okay.
Right. So they covered quite a bit, Cole, with what he was reading. And yes. And so back in the day in New York when I was still, still living there, it's like when Aline would have examples, all of that of how they are doing this and using it. So by the time we end up be standing before these magistrates and all of them, and they're saying something, and they have enough nerve to ask you, do you understand? And our people say, yeah, we understand. And what really gets handed down, we don't understand. What they just said. It sounds like we understood them. That's not what they meant.
Symbiography. I want that in because it's going to be used again because it's coming up in some cases we're dealing with around here in Louisiana, right?
Right.
And
right.
I want to educate the people on something because when we walk in the courtroom, they're not talking street. They're talking Black Law Dictionary and what the brother's saying now. So we need to know because the language. There's language for everything we do in life, where you communicate. When you communicate in the courtroom, like that's what you do on the streets, you know?
Yeah.
And you want to hear something, Cole? You may know this already, and I know Brother Dwyer knows this. The language that the English-speaking people and the Spaniards and Portuguese-speaking people were using in this land so that they can promote their level of trade and commerce, English was the preferred language, and it was already a business language. They had initially agreed to make it a business language while everyone still, at some point, had their own local tongues. Now, our local tongues have been replaced with this business language.
Brother Bahab.
Yes.
We can ask ourselves a question like we asked, where did this language we speak come from? It came from the ancient serpent lords.
Yes.
It was called a forbidden language. for 350 years by the Catholic Church, and for the only book that you could find this language in was the 1529 Tyndale Bible, which became the King James Revised Version of that Bible,
right,
that the Angelic Gospel Christian Epistle teaching of religion in the Western Hemisphere uses this book. This language was called the ancient Sanskrit language, and how you recognize this language was, this is the only language that got a J in it. The J is a serpent standing on its hind leg. The U is how two serpents mate with each other. The E, the small E, is how they sleep. The cobra puts his head in. And the S,
right,
is when he's in his strapping position. And like great-great-grandpa taught me when he was teaching me this knowledge, he said, boy, you can't say S without hissing. And so
right,
you have to understand the language that we speak. Where did this come from? What do we like? And the young man that was your friend, he touched on
right,
something that was awesome a while ago. It's the number.
Right. That, mm-hmm.
See, you ain't been taught mathematics and arithmetic in no damn school. You've been taught cordial numbers, but the Arabs and the Jerusalem Hebrews, they don't teach their children that until after 8 years old. They don't teach them cordial numbers, add, subtract, and multiply, and divide. They don't teach that shit no more to their children. That's the reason the Jews and the Muslims don't send their children, most of them, that's up under the Sharia law, to no European old school that they taught up and educated us in our ways. They started being co-op at 6 years old, but me and Co has noticed that they're taking our grandchildren at 3 years old and programming him to this goddamn school system that they say is the truth, which is a damn lie. We are prosecutors. We are FBI, first black investigators, that's prosecuting
okay,
your ass, the subhuman ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we are. Me and the hunter and the fisherman. So
right,
you had to understand this language that you all caught up in. This ain't you. When you was created,
here's the most important aspect.
When you was created, the creator, which was female, that we call Amanyak, ain't no God, she created you male and female. In her image, made you a supreme being. And if you any goddamn thing other than that, then you out of your damn original mind, because you wasn't made no human being. You wasn't made a man and a woman. You wasn't made an African or an American. If you was created first as male and female, you're a supreme
right,
goddamn being, but that's the way you got to teach your children to have that kind of mind. And you can't have that mind believing that God created you, because every nation
right,
of
which,
people have a God.
Right, and which brings us to a point. Right, Aline, you was trying to chime in, Aline. What is it you was about to say, Aline?
He's talking about this language. The number one aspect of this language we need to understand, it does not have a very high vibrational that's
tone,
pretty much it.
Frequency.
This language, yeah, frequency, that's the word that I'm looking for. This language does not have a high vibrational frequency, and that's by design. When you get into the Kabbalah
right,
and you get into metaphysics from the Rosicrucians, they're using words and not words and terms in their original language, which bring about that high vibrational and energy phase that affects the higher mind.
Right.
And our higher mind, that's our God mind. That's the thing that connects us to God. Remember in the movie, The Ten Commandments,
right,
And right. I'll just use the television version. They show Moses, he's come back from the mountain, and his wife and his brother saying, look, he's seen the face of God. And the brother asks Aaron, what did he look like? He said, he is not a man. God spoke to my higher mind. God is spirit. And that's
right.
what high vibrational words do. They affect us
right.
at the highest level of our spirit.
Right. And I want to just comment just on the tail end of what you just said, because Brother Dwyer pushed me to it. So here's my comment, Brother Dwyer, is that not only is English low vibration, the medical establishment has long since and have always known this. Two things affect the body. If you eat swine flesh, it says the ancient Greek physicians know this. This is in a book I got up on my shelf. They knew the foul effects, and the name of the animal in its original language means I see it as foul, meaning it's not good to eat. It had a name that matched what the animal was. So it affects the flesh, and now you're speaking in a tongue that does not activate the pineal gland. So you're having difficulty trying to activate, or we're misfiring, activating the pineal gland. So again, to use a story with Jacob, they tell you in a weak way in English, he laid down in a place called pineal. No, that's
right.
not what is meant by that. He went within, meditated, and the word pineal means face of God. That's
right.
what it means. And two of us, the Japanese race as it is counted, and they said in the Negro, they're calling us African-American, the African-American Negro. We are the two distinct people on the planet. Everybody who's black ain't counted in this group, who has active pineal glands. So the medical establishment said that they are also well aware that the continuous use of English shortens your lifespan. Now, some people have escaped this in the South. So you got folks who are still pushing 100, 90 plus. So they're still managing. And I'm wondering, because Dwyer brought up something interesting, I'm wondering if it has something to do with the old manner of speech that they were using, where how they were calling things. Like they said, we were speaking crazy and ignorant. So on the plantation, instead of saying master, we were saying massa. Well, massa is in our original language. That means you are a burden on my back. Is
right.
anything copacetic? Copacetic is another term. These are not English words. So copacetic means when you ask somebody, is everything copacetic? These are our people's language here. Copacetic means, is it all right? Is everything okay? Now, they gave this to you in the movie Roots. This is still keeping with the esoteric use of language. So they show you a guy whose name is Kunte Kente. Kunte Kente has to do in the te, as you remember when I used to teach the language, the te can either be added at the end of a verb or it can be at the beginning of a verb, okay? Depends on where you are going, but it doesn't change the definition of the word. Kun fire kun means say to it or be, and it is. That's the creative principle right there. So now we're talking about they were created, agreeably so. And then they changed his name to Toby. Somebody thought Toby was English. No, Toby is Shemitic. Toby means my good. So you went from being created, acknowledged that you were created, down to the newest level, Toby, T-O-B-E, and come find out that's not an English word either. So that word means, so when you say to somebody and they ask you a question or they give you something and they want to know what you think of it, you say Toby. Toby. Toby means my good. Or you can just simply use the other phrase to say you don't have any words to describe it. Aim the bar. No words. So I just wanted to just put that in the mix. And there's other words and countless number of words beyond how much time we have for the show that we're using a lot of words again where the definition, the word is pronounced correctly, even in English, but the definition has been severely altered. So the word annoy. So there's a legal definition for the word annoy. There is a street use for the term annoy. And then there is an ancient definition for where the word annoy came out of, which is still pronounced annoy. So when he said, Abram, your seed shall be in the land for 400 years, and they will be, and what's going to go on? The English is not doing justice for the words we're looking at. And remember, Cole, we did this one time in one of your classes at Mount Tabor. So, Adnoy actually means to be lynched, tortured, stuck up, murdered, no respect, everything you got, you're being jacked for. And now when you look up the definition of Adnoy in a dictionary, that's not what you see. It's more like a minor or mild irritation. The guy made you feel a certain way. That's how they're doing these words now. The same thing when you cover up something. So we know kippur, or in Arabic, kafara, the English word cover, is coming from those words. So now you have to read the full definition in another setting on what that word fully meant to get a full sense of what you're saying. So I'm not saying you're going to eventually right now stop speaking English. That's not my point. My point is having a richer sense, as we're discussing on this platform, use of these words can set us up. Because, you know, Cole, I know you. Dawaya, I know you. Brother Drew, I know you. And my good friend Aline, we are pretty much cut from the same cloth, okay? So we're actually preaching to each other in a sense about what's really going on with language. So when we step into a place, you have to be mindful before you speak on what you're about to say. Yeah.
Brother Mahal.
Yes, sir.
Speak on each word that come out of your mouth picks up a vibration.
It sure does.
Because the word, speak on that and tell them, see, you had to understand even your name is vibrating, and your name is very important, what you name your children, baby, boo-boo, and scoo-scoo.
Right.
Well, then they pick up that energy of baby, boo-boo, and scoo-scoo. Speak on that, how the words vibrating, it picks up the energy. I don't think too many of us understand that
Let's look at the word. Let's look at the word word. You notice we use that word. Okay, so it's a compound. I know that already because its original source isn't the English source we're thinking about. So ORD is representing in a legal setting ordinance. Okay, so what ordinance am I coming with? And the W could mean and or why, way, in the other tongue, but it also means, it means A-N-D, and it also means W-I-T-H. So I'm coming with an ordinance. Well, am I really coming with an ordinance? Well, that depends on the situation, okay? Folks who, as they say, in order for us to – that's where we need the word etymologist. That's just what I would say to my friend Aline. He is definitely
exactly
in that category.
Because you're saying
what's the origin of that word? Yes, go ahead, Aline.
That's right, and that's what we've got to get back to, etymology. Specifically, we're not even speaking in words, they're terms. And I remember when, this was years ago, my hero, I had said something to you regarding a word, and you asked me, well, what is the definition behind that word? Who established the definition? And that's what terms are. Terms are given definitions.
Exactly.
Words have historical meanings.
Right. Exactly, and that brings me to another level, and this is also for you as your question as well, Brother Dwyer. Prima facie law, it appears to be so until it is challenged, and then it becomes that which the two parties agree upon. And this is another level, and then you have another level of law called vulgar law. You wear your mask on your face or else. And people don't think that these are different classifications of what they're referring to as law, but it is. Statutory law is supposed to require voluntary compliance. So when you have police precincts and police departments and they're out there talking about, well, wait a minute, what is the law that you guys – well, it's a statute. Okay, what's the statute? Okay, who's supposed to enforce the statute? How is the statute enforced? Because according to this, it's supposed to be voluntary. So they don't like you too smart like that.
Oh, no. Here's something most of our people need to understand. And it would behoove us as a whole people to understand this. They have laws and statutes on the books that benefit us, as well as case law to support it. There's a case, it goes all the way back to the 1970s, 1977, 76.
It's called Frankenhauer versus Rizzo. And it was a Pennsylvania case that involved the Philadelphia mayor. Specifically, what that case states is that each individual acts as a private attorney general as it relates to the law itself. So we are supposed to represent the law.
Exactly. Whereas they've got it the other way around, and they say that you're too incompetent to represent the law is why you need to have a lawyer. In a sense, where that came from in the 1800s or immediately, supposedly after the conclusion of the Civil War, where they made that ruling or that decision, you're too incompetent. So with us declaring you to be too incompetent, you know, you cannot go and stand before us without what we say was representation. So then we had to learn that there was pro se and improper persona, which is yourself proper with the latter one I just said.
Well, here's one. They said that we were incompetent, correct?
Yes, that's what they said.
How many of us got ourselves in a jam where we ended up on death row? And the answer would be
enough.
No one or not too many. How many people end up on death row with an attorney? Everyone that's there who had an attorney ended up on death row.
Yeah, and that's worth looking at. And the language that was being used, again, the person put their trust, they entrusted this representative, and still they didn't fully understand what was being said. They didn't understand what was being said. They thought they did. And this is the part that we get to, Brother Dwyer, where we talk about we think we're thinking correctly, and we're not. Someone taught us 1 + 1 = 5. And so when we open our mouths to speak, this is how we speak with one another until someone with knowledge come and say, no, 1 + 1 = 5. It never has equaled 5, and it never will equal 5. And therein lies the problem now.
My hear, that sounds like someone who's drinking the Kool-Aid and eating a bad batch of cross-eyed lamb.
Yeah, I always thought, and mind you, you left off something with that Kool-Aid. It's the cute Kool-Aid without the label. And the instruction said drink one glass. They drank the whole pitcher. Okay? So that's a problem. I know the program is coming to an end. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Before it was called Kool-Aid, what it was called?
It was called Polly Pop.
Sugar water? It was called what?
It was called Polly Pop.
Became Kool-Aid.
Yes.
It wasn't Kool-Aid when I was coming up. It was Polly Pop.
It was called Polly Pop back in the day.
Wow. Wow. So, hey, you guys are getting a good laugh on that one.
We old school.
Y'all also appreciate this. This is the original use of language. Today, when someone kicks the bucket, you say that person died or passed away, right? But during Teddy Roosevelt's time, if you look at the old black and white film, they didn't talk really nice at all. That language was brutal. They says, special announcement, Teddy Roosevelt is dead. That's it. There was nothing nice they said about it. And it was like, wow. So if these people were doing each other that way, you can well imagine what our people was up against when you dealt with people speaking brute, you speaking the language of a brute. You know, there was nothing nice in the language. Now you don't even say it like that. Yeah, you acknowledge the person is dead, but it's not put up front that way as it was back in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s.
So what's the new word?
Wow. Huh?
The new word now is transition. They have transitioned. I did or died.
Right.
They have transitioned.
Right. 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 Well, I got to say, guys, it's been a real good program today, I believe. Brother Drew, you still on?
Oh, yeah. I had to wrap it up.
No.
So.
Go to my hand.
Yeah.
If we're ever listening, then nobody in the 50s called it chitlins in the 40s. what was they called? What did the colored folks call chitlins before?
Cracklins?
No.
Was it cracklins?
No.
Necking.
Wrinkle steaks.
Wow.
You get what I said? Wrinkle steaks was what they was called.
Wow.
See, I go on and on with how the language done changed since 1950 with me and Cole little boys. That
yeah,
what
man.
It is.
Right.
And you can go through the culture, how the culture changed. See, it wasn't no men playing no piano in no church house when I was going to church. But all you got now is sweet petunia now. Sugar bridges.
Wow.
You go to any church house right now, man, special church, you got sugar bridges switching all over the church. See, I remember the first sugar bridges that they put in the church and gave them an Academy Award. See, I remember the first with James Cleveland, O'Neill twins. See, I call their names out. Shit, most of them are dead now. Shit. But I remember, see, I ain't suffering from no amnesia, me and Cohen. You got a lot of folks our age that is, though. A whole lot. But you had an outstanding show. And like me and Cole always say, the spirit can always whoop the teacher in the long run.
Yes, sir.
That's why.
I want to just say, Aline, thank you so much for also participating in this program today. It's just the way it goes. It's only an hour, but you know we try to get it in, man, when we can. You know. And I just want to say it's been a pleasure.
Right here,
definitely.
This hour is not enough. We've lectured for 12 hours.
Yeah, well, yeah. Remember, our first lecture was a marathon, 12 hours, and it was four of us. And folks actually stayed, and we did it where we rotated every 10 or maybe 20 minutes, just so we can make sure that the people were able to absorb the information, because we understand the mind doesn't. And that's why I like this platform. Everyone was chiming in, so they just didn't get put to sleep by hearing one voice only. I'm glad
right.
It worked out like this.
Here's the thing.
You know?
We had a roundtable discussion. That's what this is. And
right.
To the folks
exactly.
That we're up against, I got to give them credit. That's what they have. Their specialty is a roundtable discussion. I'd like to leave everyone with a book regarding this that I got
okay.
Years ago, well over 20 years ago. The book is called Satan's Angels Exposed by a man named Salem Kerbin. But what he exposed was the order in which they operate their meetings, how they have a format where everyone gets a certain amount of time to speak, depending on how many have been invited to a particular meeting. And, of course,
right.
We know their meetings are based on Robert's Rules of Order, and they
right.
They are highly structured. That's why they're so successful.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to thank you for definitely bringing that out. Because I remember we all went and got that, and we used to discuss that. And we tried to conduct our classes in a way that was meaningful to everyone, although we had 3 hours for our classes when we used to rent it out over in the Dempsey Center. And it, for the most part, and then